We have heard an awful lot about the problem with concussions, particularly in football, but it is a problem across all sports. And, of course, with the deaths of Junior Seau, Dave Duerson, Ray Easterly, that problem has been accentuated a little bit more. There is a book that I want you to check out, and particularly if you happen to be a parent. The co-author of it is Linda Carroll, and she joins us on Sports Byline. But the name of the book is called The Concussion Crisis, Anatomy of a Silent Epidemic. Linda, certainly the numbers are staggering, but what is it that makes concussions different from other sports injuries?
Well, I think the main difference is that you can't see them, you know, and that makes them so much easier to dismiss. And, you know, players dismiss them, coaches dismiss them. And like any injury, you can make things worse by playing when you're injured. So when kids go back in or pros go back in, when they're injured, you're exacerbating the situation.
Certainly, we know the numbers about concussions, but what is it that we don't know about them?
Well, I think there's a lot we don't know about them. You know, that's a very broad topic. You know, it took us a huge book to cover the territory. I mean, I think the main thing we don't understand, or we didn't understand until recently, is that they can add up, and you can end up with long-term symptoms, and you can even end up with early dementia as a result of repeated concussions.
Yeah, one of the reasons I asked that question is that it's been talked an awful lot, but I'm just wondering, is there information, is there science that we know today that we did not know 10, 15, 20 years ago?
Well, we for sure didn't know that football, for example, could lead to early dementia. We knew that boxers could get chronic traumatic encephalopathy, but we didn't know that football players could. And what we've learned from studying the brains of football players who died at early in life is that their brains suffered damage that you could actually even see with the naked eye. You know, if samples were taken from these players' brains and they were stained the right way, the damage was so extensive that you could actually see it. And that's very new. The one thing we don't know is what percentage of players end up with this problem.
Linda, you're an expert, you're a writer, but your expertise is in brain science. And, you know, the thing I think about is that obviously you and others like you certainly do understand this problem, but we're talking about a mentality in this country in which football is an entertainment sport, and there's a lot of money to be made off of it. And I'm just wondering, no matter how much information you may provide and others like you may provide, is it kind of really trying to push the rock up the hill?
Well, I hope not. I mean, I would hope that people will take responsibility and try to make sports like football and hockey safer. I don't think you can ever take all the concussions out of either of those sports, but you can reduce the number of concussions by changing some of the rules, and you can manage the concussions better so that players don't end up going back before their brains have healed.
You know, I've been reading an awful lot about it, and it's been a hot button for me since I have this national and international voice here with the network. And my great concern is really more at the younger age. In other words, we're talking about Pop Warner football leading to high school football, leading to college football, and possibly the NFL. How much more is the danger at the younger ages as compared to, say, even the college athlete or the NFL athlete?
I don't think we know the exact answer to that, but one thing we do know is that younger brains are more vulnerable to hits that occur in rapid succession. I mean, it's rare, but sometimes when you have a concussion and then you have another concussion, you know, within a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you can end up with a child whose brain swells suddenly and catastrophically, and they might die or they might end up with severe disabilities for the rest of their lives. And that doesn't seem to happen with the older players.
One thing else, too, that I've been reading about is that there's a lot of ignorance, is there not, on parents' part as far as information on concussions?
I think there is. I mean, one thing that shocked me. And, you know, I have a daughter who plays soccer. I mean, she's only eight. And this past fall, when we were watching her rec soccer, we were amazed to see coaches telling kids who were, you know, who'd had a collision and who were crying and holding their heads, oh, just get back out there. You know, you're fine. And I thought, okay, we've all been talking about concussions, and here are coaches with eight-year-olds teaching them they should shake it off and get back in and play more. And so clearly the message isn't out there.
Yeah, that's the disconnect that I see between the adult and the kid. The kid that's hurt and does not really know how to explain it because they are so young, and you've got the adult who is much more mature and probably is more involved with winning than they are with the benefit of the athlete. And to me, that is troublesome.
Yeah, I see it everywhere, and I don't quite know what to do about it. You know, I would hope that if we educate coaches more and have athletic trainers at many of the games, that will minimize the problem. But I think you hope that parents will eventually realize that their child's safety is more important than anything else.
Well, I think you know as well as I do, and this is something else I've talked about. I go out to Little League games, and I'm appalled at some of the things I hear coming out of the stands from parents because they see the performance of their child as an extension of their success or failure in life. And when that happens, they're going to not pay any attention to some problem that a child has. Is that a fair statement on my part?
Oh, yeah. I've seen that. I mean, my brother coaches Little League, and, you know, I've gone to games where his sons play, and I've been appalled. I mean, just, it's kind of scary to hear what parents say. And, you know, I think maybe some of them, if they sat down and thought about it a little bit and understood the risks, they might not be as outrageous. But, you know, you're always going to have parents who do this. I mean, I recollect that there was a case of what's called second impact syndrome a year or two ago in New Jersey, where the son, it was a football game, and the son had a concussion, and the father argued with the coach and wanted his son to go back in the game, and, you know, never wanted the kid to be taken out of his sport, and ultimately you had this tragic outcome.
And we're not trying to yell and scream the sky is falling here. I think what we're trying to do is bring some common sense into letting your kid compete, right?
Right, right. I mean, and I think, you know, parents should be a little more scared than they are. I mean, I'm glad my daughter's just eight, and, you know, the kids aren't that competitive, but I see them starting to get competitive, and this is an issue I'll have to grapple with myself, which is I want her to play. I think sports are good. I think they develop self-esteem and confidence. But, you know, at the same time, you know, you run this risk of injury.
The other thing that I wanted to ask you about is that a lot of people associate concussions with football, and we've been hearing an awful lot about that. But in your study and in your book and everything, this is a problem across all sports, and not just males, but also females as well. And I think a lot of people are probably surprised to hear that. I have a friend of mine whose daughter took an elbow in a high school basketball game, and she has since had five other additional concussions, and she can no longer play sports. Can you talk a little bit about the female aspect on this?
Right. Well, I mean, there are sports in which, you know, that both males and females play, that the females have more concussions than the males. And there are a lot of theories right now about why that is so, but nobody knows for sure what the reason is. Some people say it's because estrogen plays a role. Some people say it's because girls' necks are not as strong as boys' necks, and you know, you don't get that stability in the head-neck connection. But regardless, you know, the one thing we do know is that girls seem to be very susceptible to concussions.
In about a minute that we have left, is there any advice, just rule of thumb advice you can give parents on this issue?
Well, I think you have to be very vigilant. You know, you have to go to as many games and practices as you can, and you have to be the person who takes care of your child. You can't assume that the coach or the trainer or anyone else is going to always have your child's best interests at heart. You know, competition becomes important, and you have to be the one who's looking after your kid.
Linda, I want to thank you very much. I'm going to keep talking about it, and I'm going to urge people to check out your book. It's an excellent book, and it'll give them a lot of useful information. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
Linda Carroll with us. She is the co-author of the book, The Concussion Crisis, Anatomy of a Silent Epidemic. And from the book, on football fields across America, one question has become as much a part of the game as tackles and touchdowns. When is it safe for an athlete to return to play after a concussion? Now, the Center of Disease Control and Prevention says that 1.6 to 3.8 million sports-related concussions happen each year in the U.S., and most affect children and teenagers, and in a 10-year span, trips to the emergency room for concussions have almost doubled. So I hope that parents will listen to this message and they will ask the appropriate questions. We'll take a break, continue with more of you and Sports Byline.